Now we're holding on page 210 in Brachos, the third line of the wide lines towards the end of Oskuf Membeis. The Gemara has been bringing a bunch of miscellaneous statements from Rebbe and from other Tanoim and early Amoraim on various things of proper hanhogos, of proper behavior. The last one we had was that a person doesn't give his truma and meiser, he's going to wind up having to come to the kohen to bring his wife as a soita, and on the other hand, if he does give his meiser properly, then he becomes rich. So now another one. Omen of Huna bar Brechi and Shumra b'Lazer Akapar. Kolam shat of Shem Shemayim b'Tzairoi. A person who joins together the name of Hashem in his tzair. So what that means, Rashi explains, it means that he says Dayana Emes. So Rashi gives two explanations. One is that he says Baruch Dayana Emes on it, as we learned earlier in the Perek, that a person is supposed to do that. And the second explanation, Rashi says, is that he asks for rachamim from Hashem. So in other words, he's recognizing that the disaster that happened to him is not some random thing. He recognizes that Hashem is the true judge and caused it to happen. And the second explanation is he's asking Hashem to get him out of it. Marsha says that the word hamashatif doesn't really seem to fit with that. Rather, Marsha says what it means is that whenever a yid is in trouble, we always realize that kavyochol the shechina is in pain as well. We have a Mishnah in Sanhedrin that expresses that idea that even when a rosha is punished, even when a rosha is executed, for example, the shechina says kalani meroshi kalani mizroi, that I feel like my head and my arm kavyochol are heavy. So therefore, in other words, when we have the pasuk imer enechid tzara. So in other words, when a yid is in trouble and he davens that Hashem should do it for his sake, asei l'man shmecha, then that's a mashat of shem shemayim b'tzaroi, means that he's recognizing that Hashem is sharing in his pain and in his trouble, and asking that Hashem should help him out of it, not so much for his own sake, because maybe he doesn't deserve it, but for the Eibishter's own sake. Ion Yaakov says another point over here. It can mean a person who is having a very hard time making ends meet, but still he gives tzedakah to other poor people. So that's also like his mishat of shem shemayim b'tzairoi. Even though he's in trouble, he's not making it financially, but he's still including Hashem's name and still saying, I'm going to give tzedakah. So in any case, so koifun loy parnasasei, so Rav Huna bar Brechi tells us Hashem will double his parnasa. Shenema, as the pasuk says, "V'hoya shakai b'tzarecha," as the pasuk says, Hashem will be in your troubles. Rashi, in fact, on the pasuk over there is a little bothered by what the simple meaning of the pasuk is. B'tzarecha almost means like among your enemies. So what does that mean? Hashem is going to be among your enemies. But here, the Gemara is darshaning b'tzarecha is like b'tzarascha. Hashem will be with you in your troubles. V'chesef te'ofos lach. And you will have money of toyofos. So the word toyofos is related to an Aramaic shodesh that means to double. We find by the Mishkan, when the pasuk tells us that you have to take, you have the 11 yerios izin, and you have them placed in such a way that half of one of them is folded over the front entrance of the Mishkan, the expression of the pasuk, v'chafalta sayyuri ashishis, so the Targum translates it over there as so'if. So the Shurdish, ayin yud fei, means to double, and therefore to'ofos, the Gemara's darshaning, is meloshin double. So this way he'll have plenty to be able to give tzedakah in the future. Another meaning is that his parnasa will fly for him like a bird. In other words, it'll come very easily to him, like a bird that flies around and is easily able to find mazonos. The same pasuk, he's doubting the word toyofos, meloshin, the shodesh off, which means to fly. And the result of all of that, that all comes about because v'hoya shakai b'tzarecha, because you recognize that Hashem is with you in your troubles, according to any of the various explanations that we said. So So Anaf Yosef also goes into an aruchos about it. He also mentions this point, in other words, about Hashem's pain. So he expands basically on the idea that the Maharsha says that the idea is that, in other words, don't focus so much on your own troubles. Focus on that it should be taken away, so that Hashem, so to speak, doesn't have to feel pain about it. So then he deserves these rewards that we're saying over here. And he brings over here, the idea is that why does he get double? Is because he caused two kinds of pain, l'mayla. Number one, with his avedus, and number two, that Hashem now has to punish him, which Hashem does not like to do. So now, when he does tshuva, and now he recognizes that, he's recognizing that Hashem, that it's not himself he should be concerned with, it's Hashem, so therefore he's taking away both those things, therefore he deserves a double punishment. Also, Amr of Tuvia, Amr of Yeshia, Kol Amr Rapa Atzmi, Medivei Torah, a person who slackens himself from words of Torah, Ein Bo Koyach Lamed V'Yem Sarah. He won't have the strength to stand on a day of trouble. Because like this, if he had the schus of the Torah, it would protect him, but like this, he loses that because he slackened off. Which means, Maharsha says, it doesn't mean that he's not learning Torah and not doing mitzvahs at all. It means that he's learning Torah. He's just doing it b'rifuya b'derech ara. He's doing it like a casual thing, instead of realizing that it's the most important thing on his agenda. So then he doesn't have the koyach shenema, as the pasuk says, he's strapisa if you become weak, b'yon tzara, on a day of trouble, tzal kechecha, your koyach, your strength will be narrowed, will be weakened. So, in context of the pasuk, actually, I mean, the way the trup and the pasuk goes, it would have the simple meaning of the pasuk: "Shapisa b'yem tzara." If you're weak on a day of trouble, sar kechecha, then your strength will be weak. In other words, the b'yem tzara refers to when you're being weak. Here, the Gemara is garishing that it means you're weak. Then later on, b'yem tzara, then the result is going to be sar kechecha. That doesn't just apply to learning Torah, it applies even to one single mitzvah that a person slacks off on, or again, as Maharsha says, not even he slacks off on it, but he starts considering it something unimportant, something casual. Because after all, the pasuk doesn't say, hishrapisa midivei Torah, or something like that, it just says hishrapisa, you weaken yourself, so no matter what mitzvah it is, nevertheless, then you don't have the side of that mitzvah now to protect you. So now the Gemara tells a story which doesn't really seem to be connected directly with anything that we were saying before. One possibility is it may actually relate to what we learned in the Mishnah about Eis Lasa Slash Shem Efeder Torah Secha, that there are times we say that the Chachamim override Dinim and Torah because it's an emergency situation. So it may relate to that, as we'll see. So Amar Rav Safra, Rav Abohu have a Mishnah. Rav Abohu used to tell the story as follows. Kiyorad Hananya ben Achir of Yeshua Lagoyla. When Hananya, the nephew of Rabbi Yeshua, went down to the Goyim. So we know there's the famous Tanna of Yeshua. This Hananya himself was a great Talmud Chacham. He's mentioned in many places in Shas, in discussions of Halacha. So he used to live in Eretz Yisrael, and then at some point he moved to Babel. Goyla in particular means the city of Nahodah, and later on the city of Pumbedissa, which was the center of Jewish life in Babel at that time. So anyway, when he went there, he was determining and declaring Ibur Yarin and the Kviyos of months in Chutz La'aretz, which you're not supposed to do. You're supposed to do that in Eretz Yisrael. There are historians that explain that actually there may have been a legitimate, well, he himself says later on, he says that when he left Eretz Yisrael, there was nobody of his caliber. So they explain that actually this may have taken place during the time you had after the revolt of Ben Kuziva, Bar Kochba, as he's known in history, where afterwards the Romans started intensely persecuting and killing the Jews of Eretz Yisrael. That's when most, if not all, of the Asara Arug and Malchus were killed, and the Chachamim had to scatter all over. So therefore, at that time, Hananya left, or shortly before that, he left, and figuring that there's nobody of his caliber left in Eretz Yisrael to be able to do these things, so he started doing it from his headquarters in Babel. So now, Shigru Achrav Shnei Tamid Chachamim. So now the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael sent two Tamid Chachamim to talk to him. So it may mean, again, you know, as long as there's upheavals in Eretz Yisrael, they can't do anything. As soon as things are starting to calm down, then they send messengers to him to tell him that things have calmed down and now we have to go back to doing it in Eretz Yisrael. So they sent to him Rabbi Yossi ben Kippur or Ben Benoish Hoschaya ben Kvoto. And there was Rabbi Yossi ben Kippur, and there was the grandson of Schalya ben Kvuto, who the Gemara is going to explain in a second, was a distinguished Talmid Chacham from the end of the second Mishnah. There's actually a Gemara in Gittin that also mentions Rabbi Yossi ben Kippur and another one of the Chachamim, Rabbi Stoi, who went to Bavel, and the whole story over there involving them picking up a Pikodin and running into some tough characters over there. It seems that this is the same Shlichus that we're talking about, in which case we know from that Gemara that it's not Sam, the grandson of Rabbi Chaim ben Kvutal. He had a name, his name was Rabbi Stoi. Anyway. Kivin should raw Usam when Hananya saw them, Omalahem Lomabosam, he asked them, why are you coming? After all, you're not supposed to leave Eretz Yisrael unnecessarily. Omrulai Wilma Torah Banu. So they tell him, we came to learn Torah. That's a legitimate reason to leave Eretz Yisrael. Hichriz Alehem, so Hananya made an announcement about them to the Tzibur in Babel. And Noshim Halalu G'dorli Adurheim, you should know that these people are great people of our generation. But Abiseim Shimshu B'Veis HaMikdash, you should know, even their ancestors served in the Veis HaMikdash. This story happened about 70 or 80 years after the Churban. So you still had, it was close enough in time that people could easily trace themselves back to people who had actually served in the Veis HaMikdash. Ka'oisa Shoshaninu, as in fact, we have a Mishnah in Yuma where it talks about over there, Yom Kippur night, they had to keep the Kohen Gadol up all night so that otherwise if he falls asleep, he could become Tomei with Tumas Keri. So they had to keep him up all night. The Mishnah describes over there that if the Kohen Gadol was a Talmid Chacham, then he would be darshaning to the Kohenim who are sitting with him. And if not, then they would be reading and darshaning to him. And it happened, as we know, towards the end of the second Beis HaMikdash, there were many Kohenim Gadolim who bought their way into the position and didn't live out the year, etc., etc. So the Mishnah describes over there that if they had to read to him, they would read to him from the interesting parts of Ksuvim. So the Mishnah describes over there, they would read to him Eov, Ezra, and Divra Yomim. All of those are very fascinating, and therefore they would help keep the Kohen Gadol's attention. And then the Mishnah says, Chayim and Kvot Aloymer, Harbipam and Karisa Lafana, the Sefer Daniel. Many times I read to the Kohen Gadol from Sefer Daniel. So in other words, he's saying, you shouldn't think that list, Ezra, and Eov and Divra Yomim, is that's it. You're not allowed to read any others. For example, you can read Daniel, which is also very interesting as well. Anyway, the point is, says Chayim ben Kvuto then was one of the Kohenim who served in the Beis Mikdash, and now this grandson of his is coming to Bavel to see Hananya. So Hischel hu metame vehim metarin. Now, whenever Hananya was declaring, was paskin in halacha that something is tome, these two chachamim would contradict him and declare it tome. Hu oyster vehim matirin. Whenever he would declare something oser, they would declare it mut. Why they're doing that, we're going to explain to him in a couple of lines. So now Hananya made another announcement about them. Don't listen to what I said before. These people are people of nonsense, of emptiness. Don't pay any attention to them. They told him too late. You already built us up by saying that we're Anoshim Shal Tzura. Now you can't tear us down. You already fenced in. You can't now break it down. It's too late. Everybody knows who we are already. So he says, so why are you doing that? And as the Gemara is going to point out soon, you're really not even allowed to do that generally. When a Chacham has declared something osur, you're not allowed to declare it mutter and so forth. So why are you doing that? So they told him, because you're establishing your Ibur Yorin and Kvius of months in Chutz La'aretz, which you're not supposed to do. So therefore, like, we have to publicly contradict you in order that people should realize to stop your lying. Sam Sofer actually has a very interesting vote in it. He says it's not just that they're being Mataher and Matir random things. What it is, for example, you could have, let's say Hananya has declared a particular year to be an Ibur year. They disagree with that. They're saying that maybe legitimately it needs to be an Ibur year because of the Tekufa or what have you, but you don't have the right to declare that in Bavel. Now, let's say you could have, for example, the result of that, because it's an Ibur year, you have, let's say, for example, that a boy has not reached his ninth birthday yet, or a girl has not reached her third birthday yet, and therefore certain dinim haven't kicked in yet. Whereas they're saying, no, it already arrived, and therefore those dinim kick in. So therefore you have examples like that where you actually have the result of a change in the calendar makes a difference in the halacha in individual cases. So Amar Lahem, Hananya tells them, what's the problem? Didn't Rabbi Akiva do the same thing? There was actually a Mishnah at the end of Yevamos where Rabbi Akiva tells on himself. He says, when I went to Na'udah, which is in Babel, to be Ma'aber a year, then he says, I met up with an older Talmud Chacham who told me a certain din, who told me proof for a certain din. So we see that Rabbi Akiva did that. So what's the problem? By the way, you can see the caliber of Hananya over here, that he's calling Akiva ben Yosef rather than Rabbi Akiva. So obviously must have been great enough that he could be considered one of his chaverim. Omrulai, so these two chachamim told him, Hanach Rabbi Akiva, set aside Rabbi Akiva. You can't prove anything from that. He didn't leave anybody of his caliber in Eretz Yisrael. When we say that Ibur Shonim and Kviyas Chadoshim has to be done in Eretz Yisrael, that's only when there are Chachamim who are capable of doing it in Eretz Yisrael. But when there are no such Chachamim, then you're allowed to do it outside Eretz Yisrael. Marshall explained. The Gemara is right. So, in other words, the Gemara is going to point out soon that there's a pasuk that said that implies that this has to be done in Eretz Yisrael. So now, but they're Kinsia and Teitzei Torah and Bar Hashem Yerushalayim. What's the idea? Because in Sion and Yerushalayim, you have the Sanhedrin Gdola, or you have those successors later on in Yavne and other places. When Rabbi Akiva left Eretz Yisrael, there was nobody of his caliber left. So now it becomes mutter. And in fact, the Yerushalmi brings a few examples from Jewish history, from earlier Jewish history. It mentions that, for example, Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel, in their time, at the end of the first base of Mekdash, the beginning of, and then during Golus Babel, they did these things in Chutz La'aretz because there were no Jews of their caliber left in Eretz Yisrael. The case of Rabbi Akiva is different than you. By the way, there are Mephoshim who point out, Maloy Aroyim points out, and Durda Sereshonim, a Sefer on Jewish history, has a long discussion of this whole story. It seems that there's more than once that Rabbi Akiva went to Nahadah to do this, because that Mishnah in Yevamos describes that after he heard from this Nehemiah Ish Beis Dri, this elder Talmud Chacham, he went back and reported to Rabbi Gamliel, and then now Rabbi Gamliel, we find from the Gemara in Bava Metzia that Rabbi Gamliel passed away before Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer passed away in turn, we find in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, before Rabbi Yeshua. Therefore, that first time when Rabbi Akiva went and met Nehemiah Ish Beis Dri, you still had Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. So you can't say at that point that Rabbi Akiva didn't leave anybody of his caliber behind in Eretz Yisrael. So we must say then, essentially, that he was going as their shliach, and that would be legitimate. Evidently, in other words, conditions were so bad in Eretz Yisrael that the Romans wouldn't let them be in order to do these things, and therefore they had to send him to Nahadah to arrange it. Mashenkin, then you must have at some later point after all those Chachamim had passed away, when Rabbi Akiva again went to do it, not by the shlichus of the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael, but on his own, and that's what they're saying, that at that point he did that because lo yiniach kamoy sev Eretz Yisrael. So Hananiah says, afani lo yiniach kamoy sev Eretz Yisrael. No, and when I left Eretz Yisrael, there was also nobody of my caliber left over there. Omruloi, they answered him, that may be at the time, but G'doyim Shehinachta, the little kid goats that you left behind, in the undeveloped Tamin Chachamim, Nasu Tsyoshim Bale Karnayim. By now they become mature adult goats who have horns, which by that, also Marashah points out, they're hinting to him that the horns also represent nidui, like you take a shofar and you blow to put somebody in nidui. So in other words, if you don't stop what you're doing, then those Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael are going to have to put you in nidui. The Heim Shigruni Etzlacha, and those Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael who have since matured and become the Gdolei Ador, they sent us to you to inform you that it's time to stop doing what you're doing. And they continued, the messengers continue, V'chach Omru Lanu, they told us as follows, L'chu V'imru Lanu B'shmeinu, go tell us in our name, go tell him, Hananiah, in our name, that it's time for him to stop and to restore that authority to the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael where it belongs. Im Shemeya, if he listens, Mutav, then good. V'im Lav Yehei B'nidui, and if not, then he should be in Nidui because he's disobeying the Chachamim. And also, they continued, V'imru L'achenu Shabagoyla. They said also, the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael told us to send a message, not just to you, Hananiah, personally, but to all our brothers, the rest of the Jewish people, in the Goyla, in Babel, and particularly in Na'udah, telling them, Im Shemim Mutav, if they listen and stop accepting the Ibul Shonim and Kviyas Chadashim that Hananiah is doing, Mutav, then good, the Imlav, and if not, then Yalu Lahar, they may as well go up onto a mountain. Achia Yivne Mizbeach, Achia, who was a great person, he was the Reish Galusa of that time, so he's the political head of the Jewish people of Babel. Yivne Mizbeach, he can build a Mizbeach over there on the mountain. In other words, obviously it'll be illegal. It's after ever since the Mishnah was built, you can't build Mizbeachas and bring Korbanos anywhere else. But in other words, if you're not going to listen, then you may as well start your whole. You may as well start yourselves a whole new religion because we won't. What? Because you're not listening anyway. Yeah. Hananiah yinagin bakinner. Hananiah, which is you, can be playing the harp, because Hananiah, being the nephew of Rabbi Yeshua, he was the son of Rabbi Yeshua's brother. Rabbi Yeshua, we find in the Gemara in Erchin, was a lady. Therefore, his nephew Hananiah, of course, is also a lady. So he can be playing instruments just like they did in the Beis Mikdash. So you can build yourselves a whole new fake Beis Mikdash over there if that's what you want to do. And everybody can deny Hashem and they can say, we have no portion in Hashem. That's what's going to happen if you don't listen to the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael. When everybody heard this very sharp message, they all started crying. They all burst out crying. And they said, "Chas v'shalom, yesh baruch chelik v'elokei Yisrael." Of course, we have a chelik in Hashem. We're not gonna secede from the Jewish people. So that, in other words, we're not gonna listen. It's fine if that's what the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael are telling us. Then you're right. We're not gonna listen to Hananiah anymore. The Yerushalmi actually tells this story in a couple of places and mentions a couple of more details. So the vote would be, in other words, when he went there, it was legitimate. At the time when he went, there were Taka, as he said, there were no Chachamim of his caliber in Eretz Yisrael. His mistake is that he didn't realize that now they're telling him that the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael have since grown up and become great. So now the Yerushalmi continues, actually, and tells the rest of the story. Hananiah went to consult with Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira in Tzivin. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira was also one of the elder Talmid Chachamim of that generation. So he said to him, "I don't know what's going on over here. These guys are claiming that the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael have now grown up and they're of my caliber, and therefore that I should be giving over the Ibul Shonim and Kviyas Chadashim to them. Is that really correct? What if they're not? What if they're not of the caliber to be doing that?" And Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira tells him, "Listen, you're saying there's a suffix about it. Look, you know, because of the suffix, the fact is, by default, it's supposed to be in Eretz Yisrael. The only reason to do it in Chutz La'aretz is if you know for sure that lo yiniach k'moseh b'chutz b'Eretz Yisrael. Well, you don't know that for sure. You yourself are saying maybe, maybe not. So therefore, achareihem, he tells him, you gotta follow them, you gotta listen to them. Because they're in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore that automatically, unless you know for a fact that they're not on your level, then you have to accept their authority." And then the Yerushalmi goes on and tells that he then got up on a horse. The Mefoshim on the Yerushalmi discuss if there are two possibilities. Either the he means Hananiah, which means, in other words, that he accepted what Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira is saying, or that the he means Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira himself. Anyway, got up on a horse and started riding around to all the Kehillahs in Babel as fast as possible to tell them to stop following Hananiah's Kviyas and continue following the Kviyas of Eretz Yisrael. And see, the Rishabi says, in practice, there's only so far that you can get on a horse in a certain amount of time. So there ended up being places, it says over there, where that particular year, they wound up keeping the Yom Tovim on the wrong day because they didn't get the news in time. But it would have been the difference. Let's say, for example, imagine, for example, that Hananiah had said that a particular year should be an Ibur year, and the Sanhedrin and Eretz Yisrael had decided it should not be. Then you have a month's difference when you're celebrating Pesach. Or if he said a certain month should be Mole, and the Sanhedrin and Eretz Yisrael said Chaser or vice versa, then you're going to have a day difference. So inevitably it happened that there were some places where Hananiah or Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, as the case may be, didn't manage to reach them in time, and therefore Nagu Bekilkul. That time their Yom Tov was messed up. Afterwards, it was straightened out, and everybody went back to following the Chacham of Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, "V'chol kach lama." Now, why would Chachamim making such a big deal out of this? So, well, what's wrong? Hananiah is a great Talmid Chacham. Let him continue doing what he's doing. So the reason is Mishum Shenema Ki Mitzian Teitz Torah Udvar Hashem Yerushalayim, because the pasuk says from Tzion will come out the Torah and the word of Hashem from Yerushalayim. So therefore, the Ibur Chadoshim and the Ibur Shonim and Kviyas Chadoshim has to be done in Eretz Yisrael, unless, as we said, unless there is nobody of that caliber left in Eretz Yisrael, and then it can be done anywhere. An interesting machlokas Rishonim, by the way, on the fact is nowadays we have a fixed calendar. Now, how did that come about? The Rambam mentions that the Rambam explains in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh that and also explains in Sefer HaMitzvos that the vote is there's always been Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael. There was never a time, even in the worst times ever since the Churban, there was never a time where there were not great Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, even after they don't have Smicha anymore, nevertheless, they're still the ones who determine the calendar for us because they calculate and they find that Rosh Chodesh should be on a certain day and Yom Tov should be on a certain day. Therefore, we follow them. On the other hand, the Ramban says that no, the fact is you need smicha for it, and nobody has that smicha anymore ever since the end of the Gemara. So rather, the Ramban brings the famous thing that Hillel HaNasi, who was the Nasi about 300 years after the Churban, that he was Makadish all the months in advance until Mashiach comes. So therefore, according to the Rambam, if it were to happen, chas v'shalom, that there would be no Jews in Eretz Yisrael, then in fact we would have no Rosh Chodeshim and no Yom Tov. Because he says it depends strictly on the fact that the Jews in Eretz Yisrael make these calculations, and therefore we follow them. Well, that's the thing. According to the Rambam, any based in Eretz Yisrael has that authority. Or maybe the top based in it. So that's the thing. That's the Ramban mentions the point about the Hillel HaNasi having made the calculations and then the Kaddish the month and the years in advance. The Rambam never mentions that point. So it comes out, according to the Rambam, and he actually says this explicitly in Sefer HaMitzvot. He says, if it were to happen, Chas V'Shalom, that there were no Jews in Eretz Yisrael, which he says will never happen, the Eved has promised it's not going to happen, then in fact we would be in trouble. We wouldn't have a Jewish calendar anymore. Whereas according to the Ramban, it wouldn't matter. According to the Rambam, whichever based in Eretz Yisrael, so maybe whichever the top based in, I guess, whatever. But according to the Ramban, I don't know if we know who. According to the Rambam, it wouldn't be. You know, the fact is, all of them follow the same. All of them follow the same calculation anyhow, so it doesn't really matter. But, yeah. So according to the Rambam, why do you have one particular based in? Maybe you do. Maybe you have whichever is considered the top based in Eretz Yisrael at the time would be the one. But according to the Ramban, it wouldn't matter, even if there was no Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael at all, the fact that Hillel HaNasi made all the Kviyos in advance, then that means that was Soimach on his calculation that he made 1600 years ago, that he was, when we say, for example, that now, let's say, so Rosh Chodesh Adar is going to be 2 weeks from now on whatever day of the week it's going to be on Wednesday or whatever it is, it's based on, according to the Ramban, that's based on the fact that 1600 odd years ago, Hillel HaNasi calculated in advance until our times and until the year 6000 and declared Adar of the year, Hey Aleph and Tavshin Hey Gimel, is going to be Rosh Chodesh, it is going to be on Tuesday and on Wednesday. And so forth with the other ones. Yes.
Someone must have a copy of all this information.
No, so that's the thing. According to either the Rambam or the Ramban, doesn't mean, I mean, we have Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh. The Rambam wrote out for us Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh. Before that, you had other Sfarim that the Goyim wrote that explained the rules of the calendar. Everybody follows the same rules. There was, historically, it's interesting, there was, in the times of Rav Sadia Goyim, there was a Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael by the name of Rav Aaron Ben Meir, who claimed that he had a different Masorah from his ancestors of a certain detail in the Kviyos of the calendar. It was a difference of a couple hundred halakim, a difference of 600 odd halakim. Once in a great while, it makes a difference as far as the Kviyos. In their times, in Rav Sadia Goyim's times, it happened that there was going to be a difference as far as that, where according to this Rav Aaron Ben Meir, a particular year is Rosh Hashanah, wouldn't be Nidcha, and according to Rav Sadia Goyim and everybody else, it would be Nidcha by 2 days. So what ended up happening, there was an enormous machlokus about it at the time. Rav Sadia wrote a couple of svarim to prove that Rav Aaron Ben Meir is wrong and that the calculation that everybody else uses is correct. Lemaise, it actually did happen. There were some kahilas at that time who also ended up celebrating Pesach on the wrong day, 2 days earlier than everybody else. But eventually everybody accepted Rav Sadia's opinion, and that's how we have the calendar is set up like that. Adei Yemazeh. Maybe according to the Rambam, you could say, since this Ben Meir's Beistin was, may well have been the greatest one in Eretz Yisrael all the time, maybe according to the Rambam, you could say, retrospectively, he would have held like Rav Aaron Ben Meir rather than Rav Sadia Goyim. We don't know, of course, that Rambam lived 200 years later. By that time, the Machlokas was long since over, but anyway, yeah. Marsha points out, by the way, that you have there's a Tosfos in Sanhedrin that points out there's a different pasuk from which we learn that Ibur Shonim and Tvias Kadosh must take place in Eretz Yisrael. So why here are we bringing from Pimitzi and Tetzet Torah? And the answer is, Marsha answers that the pasuk that brings over there in Sanhedrin would only refer to when the Beis Mikdash is standing. How do we know? The same rule applies after the Beis Mikdash is destroyed, which is when our story in the Gemara takes place. For that, you need the pasuk Pimitzi and Tetzet Torah. So the Gemara asks, "V'shleima hu matar v'hem matan." Oh, the Yerushalmi mentions in the story over there that while they're having this whole debate whether Hananiah has to give up the Ibur Shonim and Tvias Chadoshim, or whether he can still keep on doing it, so the Yerushalmi mentions over there that that Rabbi Yitzchak, one of the Chachamim, they have gone up and started announcing a pasuk. He said, Eila Moyade Hananya ben Achir of Yeshua. Now, what do you mean? That's not how the pasuk goes. It goes, Eila Moyade Hashem. He says, yeah, but that's how we're going to end up over here. We're going to end up with the Moyadim of Hananya rather than of Hashem because you're not listening. And Reb Nosson also gets up and says, and starts quoting a pasuk, Kimi Bovil Tetzet Torah Dvar Hashem in the Har Pekor. What do you mean? Kimi Tzi and Tetzet Torah. Again, he says, well, this is good. Apparently, this is going to become our version of a pasuk if we don't shape up. So that told everybody, so that was also telling everybody that, look, we have to follow the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael, whether we understand it or not.
If he moved to Eretz
Yisrael, then yeah, they would include him in the group that's being Ma'aber Shon, Kaveh HaKadosh, I'm sure. Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to ask, Mishlema hu matar gei matam in l'chum. So I understand, for example, if there was something that he was declaring to her, then they would be able to be machmir still and declare it's tamei. It's not considered, it's not against halacha to do that. If one rab is passing that something is to her, another rab can pass him that it's tamei. Elohim atame v'hem atarin, but how could you have that he's declaring something tamei and they're declaring to her? Hey, chihaba, how could you do such a thing? V'hotani, we learn in a braisa, chocham shetimei, en chaveh l'rashoy v'tahar. If one chocham declares something tamei, then another chocham is not allowed to declare it to her. Osar en chaveh l'rashoy l'hatir, and if he declares something as osar, then his chaveh cannot declare it mutter. Yeah, there's a whole discussion, and there's a whole discussion about why that should be so, and I believe there's a sikha, actually, that talks about some ins and outs of that. One reason is because of the covered of the first Talmud Chacham. It's not the covered dick. He declared it also to now contradict him and declare it mutter. The other idea is that al pi halacha, that once the first Chacham declared it Tomei, then the mitzvios of it becomes that it's Tomei, and now another Chacham doesn't have the ability to declare it to her. So whatever the case, then how are they doing that, or how are they doing otherwise over here? The answer is, there is the concept, by the way, if you ask one Rav and he said it's Osir, and you go to another Rav and you tell him what the first Rav said, then maybe you can do that. But yeah. Anyway, the answer is Kosabri, because they figured, Tihechidla Nigru Rubasre, we don't want people to follow him. In other words, again, the point was, in other words, they wanted to show him that, as the Marshal says, they could slug up anything he says, even if what they're saying is not really strictly true, because they have the ability to show that nobody should listen to him, and in fact, eventually he had to give in. So that was part of their strategy to break down the authority that he had in order that now he'll understand, and everybody will understand that they have to listen to the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, they were allowed to make that exception. So again, that may be this may be one reason why this story is here in the Gemara. It may be connected with Eis Lasis Lashem, Feder Teresah. Normally, you would be Osir, that once one Rav has said something is Osir, you can't declare it Mutter. But here, that was an example of Eis Lasis Lashem, because of an emergency situation. They have to get Ibur Shonim and Kvias Chadoshim back the way it's supposed to be, and therefore they have the authority temporarily to override that deal. The Gemara continues. Tanan Abban, Shenichasu Rabbi Seinu Lekerem B'Yavne. When our Rabbeim went into the Kerem B'Yavne. Kerem B'Yavne is the yeshiva, the big yeshiva that they had in Yavne. We know at the time of the Churban, Rabbi Yechonan Zakkai asked us, "Vasyonis ten the Yavne v'Chachamah, give the Yavne and the Chachamim that we should be able to continue learning and teaching Torah and leading the Jewish people from there." And as Vasyonis granted it to him, so now they have the big yeshiva in Yavne. So at various times, the Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah, there were times when the Chachamim had to move away from there because of the Romans, because of persecution by the Romans or whatever it is. But there were several times when they came back. So during one of the times when they were in Yavne is when the following story happened. One possibility, by the way, the Rif over here brings a long explanation about Rabbi Yehuda's Dirosha. In the course of it, he mentions, actually, he refers to a Medrash on Shir HaShirim that tells that tells the same thing. All these drashas that the Gemara is going to bring in connection with the shalfei hashmad when they were finally saved from the shmad. So in that case, it may be directly connected to the previous story, because again, the previous story with Hananiah ben Achi Rabbi Yeshua happened that during the shmad of Adrayonus, in the years after the war of Bar Kochba, they weren't able to do anything in Eretz Yisrael, therefore they had no choice but for Hananiah to be doing it in Chutz La'aretz, and as soon as things calmed down, then they told him to stop. So now we'd be continuing with more that happened at that time. Now that things have calmed down in Eretz Yisrael and it's safe for the Chachamim to regather, then they gathered together and taught the following drashas. So that might be the connection. Anyway, Hoyusham Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Nechemia, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yosi Agri. So those four Chachamim were there in particular. Poschu Kulam b'Chvoid Achsaniya v'Doshu. All of them started by speaking for the covered of the hosts. So you have people are coming, Chachamim are coming from all. The reason why it's called Kerem B'Yavne, by the way, Rashi mentions, is that what? Well, they're going to talk about Achsania, about the hosts. So first of all, Rashi, by the way, explains it was called Kerem B'Yavne because they sat in rows, just like vines in a vineyard are planted in rows, so the Chachamim in the Beis Medrash over there would sit in neat rows.
So basically, they talk about the yeshiva.
So now they're going to talk about the people who are hosting the Bnei HaYeshiva who are coming to town. You know, you think of it, to put it in contemporary terms, to put it in modern terms, Yavne would be like Crown Heights, and the time when all these Chachamim are coming would be like the Shluchim Convention, or like the Shluchim Convention, or Yud Shvat, or Gimel Tammuz, or what have you, when people are coming in from all over.
You sit down like lines.
Yeah. So now they're all going to darsh in the Chvoid Achsania in honor of the people who are hosting the Talmud Chachamim in their houses. You have the Talmud Chachamim are gathering from all over to Yavne. People are putting them up in their houses. So each of these four Chachamim is going to give a drasha about the covered of the in honor of their hosts. Pasach of Yehuda, Rosh Hamadavim b'chol machon b'chvoid Torah. Rabbi Yehuda, who was the head speaker at every occasion, and we have the famous story in Shabbos how he got that title, because he and Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Shimon were sitting together, and Rabbi Yehuda praised what the Romans are accomplishing in Eretz Yisrael as far as building infrastructure, and Rabbi Yosi didn't say anything, and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon criticized them, so Rabbi Shimon was sentenced to death, and that's when he ran off to the cave and spent 13 years over there. Rabbi Yosi, they sent off to house arrest, the Romans sent to house arrest and security, and Rabbi Yehuda they honored by making him Rosh HaMadablim B'chomah. So therefore he's given the honor of speaking here first.
What was the one that
what? So that was later on, at the end of that story, Rabbi Shimon sees Yehuda ben Gerim and makes him into Gal Shalat Zomis. So now Rabbi Yehuda is always the head speaker. At every occasion, he started darshaning on the covered of the Torah. He darshaned as follows. The Pasuk says, Moshe, after the Chet HaEgel, Moshe yikach as ha'oil, Moshe would take the tent, v'notol ha'michutz ha'machne, and he pitched it outside the camp. And the pasuk continues, he called it Oyo Moyed, and anybody who was looking for Hashem, V'ayochom Avakash Hashem, anybody who's seeking Hashem, would come to Moshe's tent with Chutzamah. So, Rabbi Yehuda says, V'aloi dvorim kavachoyim. Now, we can make a kavachoyim from this. Uma aroin Hashem, shaloi ha'im meruchak ala yudbeiz mil, madach the orin of Hashem, which was only 12 mil away from the Machne. Now, not actually that it was 12 mil away from the Machne. What it was is, Moshe pitched his tent 2,000 amos outside the Machne, which is 1 mil. But the Machne itself was 12 by 12 mil. So if you happen to be living on the opposite end of the Machne from where Moshe had, so let's say Moshe had pitched a tent each of the Machne. So if you happen to live on the west side of the Machne, then you would have to be walking 12 mil to reach Moshe's tent. Marsha points out, by the way, that what's the Oren doing over there? We have the famous idea that there were two Arons. There was the Oren that Moshe had put the broken luchas in, where Hashem tells him, "Vasisa l'cha Aron eitz, make for yourself an Oren of wood, and I'll give you the second luchas." And then there was the Oren later on that Bezalel made for the Mishkan. So here we're talking about the first Oren that from then on, the usual rule was eventually that once they had the two Aronis, when they went to war, they would take the one that Moshe had made, the one with the broken luchas in it, and the one with the one plated with gold that Bezalel made would stay in the Mishkan all the time, except for the one time. In Eli's times, they took that one to war and the Plishtim captured it. where they both have, but you have the different opinions. The Gemara in Yoma brings an opinion that they were captured by Nebuchadnezzar's army and brought to Babel, and Pashas both. And then you have different opinions that in the Gemara over there that they were hidden under the Beis Hamikdash. They were hidden under the Kodesh HaKadoshim or under the Lishkas Dira Eitzim or whatever. Anyway. So Marsha points out, when we talk about the Aroin Hashem over here, we mean the Aroin that Moshe put the broken luchas in, that went together with his tent. So now, when he pitched his tent outside the Ohel Moed, then the broken luchas are in an Aroin that's in his tent as well. So now, at Kol Mevakesh Hashem, anybody who seeks to come close to Hashem is going to come to Moshe's tent, and they might have to walk as much as 12 mil. But only 12 mil. 12 mil, Sahakal, is only a couple of miles. Omra Torah of Ohio Kamavakash Hashem Yetzel Oyomoid. Still, the Pasuk compliments them and says that anybody who sought Hashem, anybody who was seeking to come close to Hashem, would go out to Moshe's tent. Then Tamar Chachamim, Shahochem Me'ir Le'irum, and Medina Le'Medina, Lumot Torah, Tamar Chachamim, who go from one city to another, or even from one country to another, much more than 12 mil. Lumad Torah, to learn Torah, Alachas Kama Vakama, how much more so that they deserve that exalted title of Mevachei Hashem, that they're seeking and looking to come close to Hashem. So that was Rabbi Yehuda's drosh. And so that's B'chvoid Achsan, so it's B'chvoid Torah, and that's the cover of the Torah, and also B'chvoid Achsania, then the honor of the people in Yavne who are putting them up when they're coming to learn Torah, how they're participating in that enormous schus. Eitz Yosef also points out, in other words, the Kvod Achsania is also that these Talmidim themselves are great people. So these are people who themselves are of the caliber of being Chachamim of their own, but they themselves still go to the trouble of going to Chachamim who are even greater than them in order to learn Torah. So therefore, their Achsania deserves all the more covered for that they enabled them to do that. That these Talmidim themselves consider themselves as only worthy of being Talmidim relative to those great Chacham. So we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, about more on Daushin and those Pesukim. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'ola, Yudal Shvat. So we have the concept that Chazal tell us that in the future, the Yilone Srak, the non-fruit-bearing trees, will become fruit-bearing trees. So in a Sicha, they never talked about that you'll have the Indian of Eitz HaSodeh in its perfection, as Rashi says on the Pasuk in the Chukosai, that even the Yilone Srak will start producing fruit, just like in the times of Adam Rishon. So therefore, now we have in that the advantage, the greatness of this Hatzach HaSholchel and Ahoda of turning darkness into light. And the parallel to that, but I will continue, the parallel to that, and the person's avodah, where after all, Ha'odam Eitz HaSodeh is the ultimate degree of tshuva in a way of hisakha, of zdonis, nasim, loikazachias, and even more, you have the avodah of the tshuva of the tzaddikim, as you have the expression in the Zohar that Mashiach is going to come to help tzaddikim do tshuva as well. Halacha. Continuing on the topic of soups and juices of fruits and vegetables. So we've been talking about, for example, fruit juice, which is always charcoal, soups, where sometimes the soup is going to have the bracha of the vegetable itself, and other times it's going to be just charcoal. Then you have, for example, if you have you soak or cook fruit just in order to drink the juice, that just in order to drink the soup, then you would say charcoal on it, and now that actually adds, even if you're eating the fruit themselves, so I guess like a fruit soup or something, because then the fruit would be tough with it. For that reason, coffee and tea, even if you're drinking the actual coffee grounds or the actual tea leaves, you would say charcoal on them. Similarly, also beer, no matter what it's made of, would be charcoal. Then you have another din. If you have vegetables or fruits that you pickle them. So even though these are vegetables or fruits that are normally pickled, for example, cucumbers or beets or cabbage, so the juice nevertheless is still only charcoal. You have a taste of the vegetable in the juice, but you're not mainly soaking them, you're not mainly pickling them in order for them to give a tam into the water. Or the Alter Rebbe's phrasing of it is that you didn't really have in mind at all that the brine should be better to drink because of that. The reason is because you wanted the vegetable itself to be improved by the pickling. Therefore, the juice would just be charcoal. But if you first eat the vegetable and say hadama, and then you want to drink the juice, then you want to drink the pickle juice, for example, then you have a suffix whether you should make a bracha on it, because maybe you were yotze with hadama, maybe that covers the drying as well. Therefore, best not to do that. If you want to drink the pickle juice, drink it separately.